If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight, we have a terrifying tale about this kid and his bully, and what he experiences in the woods leaving school for break. And let me just warn you now, after what this kid experiences, you're going to want to call Agent Mulder and Scully for this one. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. My childhood bully was abducted by aliens, and only I know what happened. When that impossible light beamed through my window, I remembered back to my childhood, back to being 12 and terrified of simpler things, human things. I hadn't noticed my TV flickering, or the smoke coming out of my now fried cell phone, or the remaining foam from my empty beer floating upwards towards the window, towards the light. I looked down and saw Riggins, my Rhodesian, was barking furiously, but I couldn't hear him. My ears had popped and the world went quiet. Then I realized I was floating 4 feet off the ground towards the window. I couldn't move. My arms and legs were limply hanging below me. It was Riggins, God bless that dog, that yanked me out of it. I was about to be pulled through the window, but Riggins, in a last-ditch effort, jumped up and bit my right hand. Whether it was by accident or some form of fate, his teeth went into the burn scar I received all those years ago. It shot me right back to reality, my wits returning, and I pushed against the frame of the window. The energy I felt pulling me up and forward evaporated, and I dropped, landing hard on the floor. My next moves were pure animal instinct. I grabbed Riggins by the collar and sprinted to the cellar. I got us in and slammed the reinforced steel door, quadruple locking it. I took us down the flights of stairs I had made to a drop floor where I had a metal cage anchored into the ground, and various other secure bindings. I got Riggins in the cage and then turned on the monitors in my surveillance bunker. Using my own power grid, built by design for this house alone, I had over a dozen cameras set up around the exteriors, in fear of capturing something exactly like this happening. Again. I had spent years researching and learning from the majority of studies that the demographics of the people who claimed to have been abducted by extraterrestrials were a hyper-slanted group. The numbers across the board revealed over 99% can be explained directly by the individual representing sexual abuse received as a child, and formulating a frightening storm to replace the violation and alien nature of the event in order to continue on and function as an individual. The remaining 1% are a mixed bag of attention seekers, the mentally ill, and opportunists. But then, somewhere below them, in the impossible percentage of decimal points, are the true tellers. I never spoke about the truth, but I knew about it. I had witnessed it firsthand as a child, and now here again. My research of truth tellers was more difficult to parse out crazy from crazy crazy. I read cases of people being abducted and returned hours, days, sometimes years later, but in the same state they were taken in, for no discernible purpose. They had been left with no memory of the events. Sometimes they had psychological issues, nerve damage. Other times there was radiation burns from what were referred to as anomalous advanced aerospace systems. Even some spoke of momentary telepathy and levitation. There were even reports and cases of repeat abductions and returns of the same person. But among the cases and reports, there were others, of people who never returned at all. I couldn't speak to much of that, only what I experienced. The monitors show the light was still pouring into the living room from the exterior source. But as I expected, none of my cameras, including short, mid, and long-range infrared technology I had designed myself, was picking up where the light was coming from. It simply stopped mid-air. I switched between sensors and found one that picked out a partial, fluctuating shape hovering 40 feet above my front yard. Against the night sky, it was almost impossible to detect. Then the light stopped. My front yard and house returned to normal darkness of the night. But now there was something on my lawn. I strained to see, but it was too dark. I turned on my front floodlights, but couldn't believe what was there. It was more impossible than anything I could imagine. My hand throbbed from the bite, and I was pulled back to my childhood again, to the afternoon where this all started, and the bully with the black mullet who used to haunt my dreams. Every boy knew a kid like him growing up, the kind that would always be the first to pick up an ice in a snowball fight. His name was Jeff, and he absolutely frickin' hated me. I never knew what it was, but from the first moment in his class, he made a point of turning my day-to-day into a nightmare. It was years ago, but I still remember the fear I had going through the empty hallways, thinking he would jump out of an empty classroom and pull me in to cover my abdomen, sides, and back with quick hits from a cell phone book he carried around in his backpack. It never left any bruises, which was why he used it, but it hurt like hell. It was the Friday before March break, and Jeff came the first period with a black eye, which meant I would be spending my vacation with two. He had come in with bruises and cut up lips before, but this black eye looked like it really hurt. I wanted to skip the rest of the day, but I had an assignment to hand in at the end of the last period. It was one I'd really been excited about, too. We were given a choice in our science class to present a project that summed up all of our previous lessons. As one of the more advanced students, I spent weeks deciding on what to build. I eventually landed on a small rocket, but not one fueled by vinegar and baking soda, one that used an actual flame-based propulsion system. Somewhat. Okay, I emptied out several Roman candles and other fireworks my dad left from the 4th of July, and had enough to make two thermos-sized projectiles. Both had tops filled with glitter and starch, and the rest the chemical cocktails to create a large firework display to celebrate the coming vacation, and hopefully get an A+. It was advanced stuff, but I was an advanced kid. Apparently, too advanced, as my teacher was disturbed I'd use gunpowder in a school project. She did give me an A, but said to never do anything like it again. She only let me shoot one of them off, which meant I had one to myself to launch over the break. I just needed to get to that break. I kept my head down and managed to avoid Jeff through end-of-day homeroom.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I even got to my bike and was halfway off school property before I saw him. He had just mounted his own, much bigger bike and was staring at me from the racks. Part of me wanted to pull back and go back into the school, At least there, teachers were somewhat nearby. But once we left the property, it was a long, desolate ride to my parents' house. And there was no way I could outpedal him. But the school buses were pulling in, and Jeff's path was blocked just long enough for me to make a quick turn, and then turn off the side street I knew to lose him on. I turned down another street, and then another, and quickly found myself ripping along beside Wakewood Park. It wasn't so much a park as it was a dense forest that dropped in the middle of an inner city. Maintenance of it had long been abandoned, so the foliage had heavy overgrowth and many connecting paths and trails making it appear jungle-like. I started to fantasize about how I would spend the next week, enjoying every day not being terrorized by Jeff. And just as that thought struck, Jeff's voice roared from behind, calling out my name. He was two blocks back, but gaining with a burning fury. I was still too far from home to beat him in a race, and there wasn't anywhere ahead or through neighborhoods that I could lose him. But there was Wakewood Park. I actually knew it pretty well, and immediately formulated a plan to get to the main series of paths, then turn off and hide in the bushes. I could double around and be back out here in the street when Jeff was getting himself lost in the trees. The last bike entrance was coming up, and I quickly darted down it. I rode faster and harder than I ever have, dipping and dodging between pathways as the woods grew denser and the sunlight dimmed out. Up ahead, there was a series of bushes I knew I would be able to cover myself in. I turned back and didn't see Jeff, so I pulled off the path and quickly hid in the shrubs. I waited there, catching my breath but kept my ears strained for the sounds of his bike and his grunts. Minutes were passing, but all I could hear was thunder in the distance. A storm was predicted for tonight, and I'd be hoping to get home before that started, which was looking less and less likely. I checked my watch. A half hour had passed. I still hadn't heard a sound. Then it really started to get me that he might be riding around the pathways looking for me, and if I got up, I'd probably run into him here. And him finding me here was scarier than out on the street, which was scarier than back at the school. Why hadn't I just stayed there and weathered the storm, literally and figuratively? The storm was getting closer and dark clouds filled the sky. I knew rain wasn't far off, and decided to venture back out slowly. I checked the path and saw it was clear in both directions, when wheeling my bike out. My head was on a swivel, snapping back and forth as I pedaled through the darkening woods. Thunder was cracking and I could feel raindrops sneaking through the canopies above. I found my way back to the main path and followed it to the entrance, where Jeff was waiting. He was smarter than I thought. He just sat there and waited, knowing eventually I'd have to come out from one of the exits on this side, and we'd be back the bike race again. Luckily, I saw Jeff before he saw me, so I managed to stop and turn back around in the park. My bike whipped me back down the main path, and just as I was about to turn down a series of branching off trails, thunder erupted again. And with it, Jeff's voice, screaming my name. I didn't turn back, but knew he had seen me and was making chase. This was going to come down to a race through the park. I turned down the darker trail, hoping I could maybe lose him as the woods became more dense. Rain was now coming down in sheets and visibly getting worse. Jeff's voice was getting closer. I turned back for a moment and saw he was 10 feet behind me and gaining. I looked back ahead just in time to see a gnarled root that jutted up from the path. I turned my bars at the last second and managed to narrowly miss it. But Jeff didn't. I heard him flop over his handlebars and land on his back as the bike launched into the bushes. He yelled in pain, and I kept pedaling. I pivoted on a new path and followed it, only it was leading deeper into the park, and I needed out. It was getting dark, abnormally dark for this time of day. It wasn't even dinner time yet, and the storm clouds were black and caused it to feel like night had come early. I continued on the path and saw it open to a clearing. I rode out into the glade and saw several other trail entrances in the general direction back to the street. I picked the furthest one and pedaled as fast as I could to it. But as I was halfway there, a yell pierced my eardrums from the right, and I caught a flash of Jeff's face as his bike T-boned mine. We both went flying, landing and sliding on the rain-slicked grass. I tried to get up quickly, but my ankle twisted and I could only hobble. Then I saw Jeff standing up only a few feet from me. We were squared off with each other. He was gonna kill me out here. And just as the thought streaked my mind, the rain stopped. But only over Jeff and I. It was like we had a circular roof high above our heads all of a sudden. I heard my Walkman and my backpack start up, spitting out eerie static sounds. Which was strange since the batteries in it had died during lunch. Rain droplets on the grass below us started to float upwards, pulling up by some kind of reversed gravity. A low-level hum caused the ground to vibrate. My body began to tingle, and the most powerful beam of light shot down upon us. I tripped backwards over my bike and managed to get my senses back. I got my bike going, pedaling through the pain of my ankle, and took off towards the pathway entrance. I knew visibility from the pathways above would be blocked by the trees, but I just needed to get there. I looked back as I left the clearing and saw Jeff. He was 10 feet off the ground, floating upwards, and bathed in a beam of extreme light like he was being called forth by some divine entity. Jeff's chest was pointed up as if being pulled by a magnet, and his arms and legs dangled limply below him. I couldn't make out where the light was coming from, only that it stopped about 20 feet higher than where Jeff currently was. I'd heard stories of the rapture and ascension for those deemed worthy, but this did not feel like that. This did not feel like he was being saved. A new beam of light hit me as I tried to disappear in the woods. Streaks of that radiance blazed through the trees, following me as I went deeper. It would lose me and then pick me back up on a new path. I realized I needed a better plan than just to get back to the street. With a storm this bad, it was doubtful anyone was out. So I was in the same position as I was before, a race home against something that was far faster than me. Then I remembered the highway. There was a large, 6-laned highway that cut over top of the park far down at the end. It ran through the city, but more importantly, it had an underpass that would give a low cover all the way to the neighborhood that would lead me 1 block away from my parents' street. 3 blocks further and I'd be home. With the formulation of a plan, I felt my sense of direction locking back in like a series of gears. I dipped down on a new path, feeling like the street wasn't far off now. The storm was raging and the trees around me looked like they were about to be pulled from their roots. Leaves and branches were flying everywhere, like a hurricane that had been willed into existence. The impossibly bright beam kept piercing through it all and finding me pedaling frantically. A new path, this one leading over to the left. I darted down it and lost the light. It disappeared, and I found myself relying on fast twitch muscles as I navigated the dark trail, occasionally lit by the spider lighting that crept along the dark clouds underbelly. I kept hoping to see streetlights sneaking through the trees, but there was just more darkness. I had a terrible feeling I was going deeper and deeper into the woods. Then I saw the entrance. The trail I was on led right to it, but there wasn't any light from the street. I slowed down as I approached it and stopped a few feet away, still under cover from the forest canopy. Where were the streetlights? It looked like all the power was out on the street, maybe further. Lightning continued to strobe across the sky. I could only see the underpass from where I was and decided I'd pedal as fast as my bum ankle would allow and keep as close to the trees on the side for cover as possible. My eyes scanned the straight path I'd take. It was hard to tell with all the rain, but it looked clear. I checked the other way before pulling out and saw 100 yards in the other direction. There was a circular portion of the road that wasn't being hit by rain, just like the clearing. I hadn't wanted to think about it, but it was some kind of circular-shaped ship, but was somehow invisible, transparent. Even with the flashes of lightning were surging, there wasn't as much as a glare. I realized the ship was waiting for me, just like Jeff had been. Had it already learned from him? Take his knowledge and experiences? Known where he had thought I'd come out because that's where I had last time? If that was the case, I guess I'd outsmarted him this time. The underpass was about the same distance from me in one direction as the ship was in another. I just needed to get to the highway. It wouldn't be able to follow me under, I hoped. I caught my breath and kicked off quickly, riding along the curb and at the edge of the trees. I got halfway there before I turned back to check and saw the circular spot on the road was now chasing me. The Walkman in my backpack screeched out again. I kicked it in the high gear, standing up and pedaling furiously. My ankle was killing me, but I kept going. Just as I was pulling into the underpass, I was bathed in that impossibly light beam again. But I was safe, and the light was cut off by the overhang. I kept going, following the underpass as the storm surged from both sides. No wonder no one was out tonight. It was frightening not to see any lights anywhere, just dark windows and buildings. The offshoot that led to my parents' neighborhood was coming up, but I knew once I left the underpass, it would be a straight-up race to my house. And that was a race I couldn't win against Jeff, let alone an alien spaceship. I needed a plan. And then one came. I slowed down and took off my backpack. I reached in and pulled out my second rocket I had made. The siding was cracked and leaking powder. I tried to cover it up, but everything was wet and just made it into a liquid that dripped all over my hand and wrist. It would have to do as is. I checked out the matches. At least they were dry. I was ready, and pushed off once more before leaving the underpass. I had the rocket and matches tucked inside my jacket, trying to keep them as dry as possible. I came to Willow Lane, which would lead me through my neighborhood. I looked at the ground in the direction I was heading, but could only see rain hitting pavement. It looked clear. I kicked off from the protection of the underpass and was immediately hit with the same blinding light from above. Rain wasn't hitting me anymore, and I could feel my body growing weightless. The brakes on my bike froze up and I stopped in place. I quickly rustled through my jacket and pulled on the miniature rocket and matches. The rainwater in the puddles below me started dripping upwards, moving with the reversed gravity. I kept trying to spark the matches, but none were taking. I felt my feet lift from the ground and my skin started to tingle again. A loud hum was plugging my ears and I couldn't hear anything. Then the match sparked, and I cradled it into the wick. The wick caught almost immediately, and I pointed it upwards as it burned down and I floated up. The rocket took off, burning my hand and wrist badly. It shot straight up at the ship and exploded in a rainbow of sparks. And as it did, the beam shut off and I fell back to the ground. Luckily, it wasn't a far drop, and I managed to climb back onto my bike and take off again. I motored through the neighborhood, the storm surging above and the power still out below. I saw some candles and windows, but it looked like electricity was on everywhere. I never looked behind me. I just kept telling myself to keep pushing forward. The blocks were passing quickly, and I was getting closer to home. I was waiting for the light beam to flood over me again once more, just as I was about to get away. But I pulled into my driveway and saw the garage door was left open. I rode right in and turned to put it down behind me. As I did, I saw the power coming back on in the other houses, like a switch had been flicked on some grid. The power in my own house came back on. I went right to the basement and stayed there until my parents got home. I hid the burn on my hand until the next morning, when it hurt so much I had to come clean. I told my parents it was from the science project I had been working on myself. My mom had always been nervous of me experimenting, and this was all she needed to put a freeze on my scientific curiosity. The power outage the night before was blamed on the storm. Maybe that's true. I don't think it was. But after the hospital trip to the burn ward, I spent the rest of the weekend in the basement and barely went outside at all during the break. The first Monday back after break, there was an assembly. Jeff was missing. He had been gone since Friday, and I knew all too well. There were police present, and we were encouraged to come forward if we had any information. The investigation went nowhere. It couldn't. Only one person in the world knew what happened to Jeff, and that person wasn't going to risk ending up in a psych ward for telling the truth. It was hard keeping my mouth shut, knowing people were looking for him. There was a large memorial for Jeff at school. Only his mom was there. He never knew his father. When I think about it, I assume that's why Jeff was the way he was. No father figure, no voice of authority. I was lucky I had one of my own. I read a year later his mother took her own life, guilt over the neglect and loss of her son. Part of me wished I had told her what had happened to Jeff, even if she didn't believe me. But now, here, 2 decades later, sitting in my basement in front of the monitors, I wish she was alive more than ever. I was still staring at my front lawn and what was laying there, curled up in a fetal position. It was a boy, roughly 14 years old, with a black mullet, and the same clothes as the bully who had tormented me as a child. The boy rolled over, and I saw his face. It was Jeff. Still, the same age.